ስለተ ያደረሰልን እንደነ ስለታያችሁ ስምልታን ይገና ተስማይስ ይሎበነባ ፍሬ ጨይታኔ ነው ቢስተም ስፍይተም ዘነቦ ተደንሳይም በከዛማ ያምነበት ይሳፈለት ባንስኮፕ ሲደስቻ ክብስም ወይ ብቻ ፍትህትናም ባብለኝ ነው ወጭ something that's extremely secret and confidential. Confidential in the sense that it is meant, really, these topics are meant for, they're easy to understand on one level, but they are meant for those who are extremely advanced in Krishna consciousness, because the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam describes the activities of Krishna in Vrindavan, the spiritual world. In the material world, everyone's consciousness is as if they are the center of existence. And because of that consciousness, which is known as ahankar, or false ego, a sense of ego means the sense of existence, but false ego means a false sense of our existence. So because we have a false sense of being central to the universe, which is based on our lack of understanding who the actual center of the universe is, it's Krishna, not only the universe, but of all existence. It is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, we remain forever, practically speaking, in the material world. But as soon as we accept Krishna as the center, acknowledging very humbly that we are not the center of existence, that we are tiny, we are insignificant. And this is very hard for a soul in this material world to do, to accept his own insignificance. So if one, feeling oneself very humble and meek, accepts that I am not the center of the universe, but that actually there is a true center, and that true center is God or the Krishna, the Supreme Lord. And then if one gives oneself to him, acknowledging his position as a surrendered servant, and begs and prays to be engaged in Krishna's service, then such a person gradually makes progress, develops his love for Krishna, and gradually makes progress to the spiritual world. But what is that spiritual world? What is that realm? People tend to have a conception of spiritual that means somewhat ethereal, translucent, that you can sort of see through it, as if the spiritual realm was composed of ghosts or something like that. That's people's conception of what the spiritual realm might be. But it is nothing like that. The key note or the key conception of the spiritual world, the main differentiation between the spiritual world and the material world, is the eternality of the spiritual world. And that the spiritual world has a center, a clear center, and everyone in the spiritual world acknowledges that center. And that center is Krishna, and everyone in the spiritual world, in the eternal realm called Goloka Vrindavan, they have love for Krishna. And they, due to that love, they wish to always serve him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus, That, again, that is the qualification for being in the spiritual world. So, this 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, which we're reading, we'll read several verses from it today, it discusses the activities of the spiritual world. And they are very simple on one level. But when one understands that these activities are being enacted by the supreme, eternal, all-powerful controller, omniscient, omnipotent, supreme personality of Godhead, and that everyone simply loves that person who is known as Krishna, then the true wondrousness becomes more apparent. So here in the 15th chapter of the 10th canto, we're reading how Krishna, along with his elder brother Balaram and all the cowherd boys that were with Krishna, they entered the forest, which was known as Vrindavan. And as everything in the material world happens, every person in the material world is striving to be the center. Everything in the spiritual world is striving to serve Krishna. Everything in the spiritual world is fully conscious and strives with great devotion to serve Krishna. So when Krishna entered the Vrindavan forest, that act, the forest, the trees, the flower-giving vines and plants, everything was arranged in such a beautiful, fragrant fashion so that Krishna would be pleased. And Krishna entered that forest with the mood of enjoying the offerings that his devotees were giving him. And Krishna wished to exchange loving sentiments with those devotees by accepting the offerings and giving them happiness. So here in text 5, did we read 4 yesterday? Yes. So text 5. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, that means that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, aho means all, Ami Deva Vara, O Balaram, O best of lords, who is worshipable by everyone, by the best of the demigods. Everyone is worshipping you, Krishna said. Just see how these trees are bowing their heads at your lotus feet. How the trees were bowing down because the trees are heavy with the fruits that they're offering. So Krishna saw how the branches were lowered to the ground. And in Vrindavan you see trees like this. I think they are pilu trees. The branches come down like this, heavily laden with their fruits here in this case. So it appears as if they are bowing down. So Krishna said, O greatest of lords, O Balaram, just see how these trees are bowing their heads at your lotus feet, which are worshipable by the immortal demigods. The trees are offering you their fruits and flowers to eradicate the dark ignorance that has caused their birth as trees. Purport. The trees of Vrindavan were thinking that because of past offenses they had now taken birth as trees, and being immovable they could not accompany Lord Krishna in his wanderings throughout the Vrindavan area. In fact, all the creatures of Vrindavan, including the trees and cows, were great souls who could personally associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because of ecstatic sentiments of separation, because they were thinking that they were unfortunate because Krishna was going to be wandering throughout the forest and they could not be with him because they were trees and therefore immobile, They were thinking themselves unfortunate. This was their sentiment. The trees have consciousness. In the material world, trees have consciousness. In the spiritual world, the trees have consciousness. In the material world, the trees are dull. Extremely dull. In the spiritual world, they are conscious. And here too, as described, they want to make offerings to Krishna. They are exalted souls, actually. So they were feeling in their exalted spiritual sentiment that due to their unfortunateness, they were not able to accompany Krishna. And this is the mood in Vrindavan. Everyone simply wants to be with Krishna. And in the material world, the mood is exactly the opposite. Everyone wants to avoid Krishna. Everyone wants oneself to be the center. Again, that is the mood of the material world. But in the spiritual world, it is permeated by love for Krishna. So therefore, the trees, considering themselves in ignorance, tried to purify themselves by bowing down at the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram. Lord Krishna, understanding their mentality, simultaneously glanced at them with affection and praised their devotional service before his older brother Balaram. Here's a comment by Srila Sanatana Goswami on this text. The first word in the text is aho. So the word aho, which means that's an exclamation. The word aho is spoken in joy or in surprise or as respect to Balaram. They are offering their flowers and fruits to you. These are the paraphernalia of their worship, the Sumana flowers. Hints that this is based on transcendental ecstasy. Oh brother, you are worshipped by the immortals, such as Brahma and others, by their bringing upon their heads that which is found in this world and suitable for presentation to you in devotional service. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, we present worship at the lotus feet of our master, Sri Krishna, with our own fruits and flowers and so on, thus making known with a sidelong glance his own perfect knowledge. Krishna is expressing to the trees that he understands their mood. So he is expressing his own perfect knowledge to his exalted devotees, the trees of Vrindavan, with the thought, I know what you are saying within your minds. Lord Krishna speaks to his elder brother in the verse beginning, Aho. They are making their offerings of their fruits and flowers to his feet for the elimination of their own darkness, of their offenses by which they have achieved their births as trees, in which they feel they are incapable of moving into the proximity of Krishna. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead is relating the words of them which arise out of ecstatic sentiment. In actuality, birth as a tree in Vrindavan is fit to be prayed for, even by persons like Brahma. It should be understood that it's not the consequence of any offense. Again, the comment described that this is just a sentiment on the behalf of trees. The trees of Vrindavan, even they are thinking they want to be with Krishna. They want to be with Krishna. They want to be with Krishna. No one in the spiritual world wants anything else. And this, again, is the nature of pure love. And in that, with that mood, as Sanatana Goswami said, they are, as Krishna is describing, and Sanatana Goswami is commenting on here, they are bringing upon their heads that which is found in this world and suitable for presentation to you in devotional service. So this is the process of worshipping Krishna. It is not actually difficult, because one just takes what is in this world, and what is in this world then is suitable to serve Krishna with, and one makes an offering out of that. Whatever one has, whatever one is, whatever according to one's karma comes one's way, whatever talents one has, whatever energy opulences, gifts one possesses, if one can learn the art of using those in Krishna's service instead of using those for our petty attempts at sense enjoyment and pleasures for ourselves, centered around ourselves, which don't award us any happiness. If one can learn to take those very same things and offer them to Krishna with devotion, then one's life can be fully successful. And one can develop one's love for Krishna, because that is the perfection of life. In this text, there's talk about the trees. They have taken their birth as trees. So the basic concept is that how we act within this life, that determines our future birth. If one acts in a foolish way, in an ignorant way, doing things that are harmful to the body, doing things that are harmful for the mind, based on ignorance, lack of understanding the difference between good and bad. If one acts in that way, in an ignorant way, one can take one's birth in such a covered, ignorant species in one's next life, even as a tree. Because the tree, what is more insensitive than a tree, in one sense? It just has to stand there all day, all night, whether it's hot, whether it's cold. No choice. You want to be covered? You want your consciousness to be covered? Then become a tree. This is the process of transmigration for the soul. And on the other hand, if one wants one's consciousness to be fully developed, to reach the summit, or let the consciousness expand, the soul, every soul naturally has consciousness. When one allows his consciousness and acts in such a way that one's consciousness expands, then one can attain the most exalted of results by living in a very subtle and good fashion. One's consciousness naturally expands, and one becomes very, very gentle. And the final expansion, which is the natural consciousness of every living entity, when it's expanded up to the point of loving Krishna, then that is called Krishna consciousness, and that is perfect. That is the perfection of consciousness. You've walked in for a first class in another esoteric one. This is your fate, isn't it? Do you have any questions about any of this? What's your name?
Grant.
Brisham, that's my name. Nice to meet you. Yeah. Have you ever chanted Hare Krishna before?
Yeah.
Where?
About 7 years ago, a friend of mine invited Ruby to come here a lot.
Yes. And, what's his name?
Michael Barton.
Oh. Michael. Mike, the honey?
Honey.
Yeah. Preferably.
Yeah.
He's still there?
Yeah.
How is he?
Yeah, he's going okay, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Nice fellow.
Yeah.
Yeah? You're reading the Bhagavatam. And what are you up to in the Bhagavatam?
Just about halfway through.
Oh, we skipped you ahead right to the 10th canto. So you're already familiar with the basic concepts of Krishna consciousness. And Jason, you are too. Because when people think of spiritual life, or the goal of religion, people don't have a very specific idea. They generally have a very general idea. And when people think of heaven or something like that, There are no specifics attached to that. So when you talk to your friends who are you have friends that are interested in spiritual things, I presume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not very many. What do you understand? First of all, what do they understand is what spiritual life means? People will take up spiritual life without really having any idea of what it means, or what the goal is, or what the basic philosophical principles that underline spiritual life are. So what do your friends tend to say is spiritual life? Or the goal or something like that? Really? You must be lonely.
They have a different mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they just didn't have the material modes, really.
Yeah. Mostly in them.
From action. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So do you have any questions about Krishna consciousness that is pressing or relevant for you? Grant?
No.
Then let me ask.
Nothing in particular.
Well, what say if you desired to take a step forward in spiritual life, what would you do? And this isn't a question just for.
Probably.
This isn't a question just for, you know, people who have just come to the temple for the first time. This is a question that we all should ask ourselves, because we should be wishing to take steps forward in our spiritual life. But I'll ask you, what would you do?
I suppose for the last few months it's about we're cousins. We think to travel because we've got some consciousness now to different pilgrimages in different places.
Where would you go? You're going to go wandering around India.
There's a temple that we're thinking about, we'd like to go to.
Which temple?
Which temple in the Himalayas? Yeah, the one in the Himalayas.
The one in the Himalayas. There's only about 60 billion of them.
There's one up there that would be nice, because it's not from what there is.
What one is it? I'm curious.
It's
on Badrinath.
Yeah. Yeah.
Up way up in the Himalayan mountains. Badrinath. Is that the place?
Yeah.
Yeah. What? That's really wild.
Why not?
But let me ask you a question. If you travel all the way there, then what do you expect to do when you get there? So if you're going to go all the way there to read and chant, why go all the way there to read and chant when you can read and chant here?
Just I think you get, you know, used to the same surroundings.
That's true. But there's probably closer things you can do.
Yeah.
Actually. Yes. But the activities of hearing and chanting and studying the Bhagavatam and chanting Hare Krishna, they're certainly very powerful. And how did you first get a book? A Krishna conscious book? Through Michael, yes,
yeah.
You told me that. And you also through Michael? It'll take its time and we'll get there. So you're actually both seriously planning on
going
up there?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
When do you plan on going?
Within the next 12 months.
A serious plan for both of you. Yeah, there are many wonderful places. You know, you should, one place that you'd be interested in going is Mayapur. Have you heard of Mayapur? This is the place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Very wonderful place. Very beautiful. And it's open for more than 3 months out of the year. But it has facilities that are more suitable for Westerners too. How will you prepare yourself for your journey? Do you chant at work?
Mm-hmm.
Do you chant Hare Krishna at work? Out loud or?
I think that sometimes it comes out. Yeah.
Yeah. One time, Michael gave me some honey, and I brought it to India, and I brought it to Vrindavan. And I gave the honey to the deities in Vrindavan. Carried it from here to there to bring to Krishna Balaram. Because Balaram is especially fond of honey.
Red gum and wildflower.
Well, anyway, we brought one of them.
Yes,
and you're still down there? Well, you want to hear more about Vrindavan? Okay. So Krishna continued to speak to Balaram. O original personality, and here we spoke yesterday that although Krishna is the Adi Purusha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he addresses Balaram as the original person because of the subtleties of what he wants to say. So he says, O original person, O Adi Purusha, these bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. So many interesting points here. Though you yourself, very relevant to your journey to Badrinath also. Listen to that sentence. O original personality, or Balaram, or Krishna will say, these bees must all be great sages and the most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves the holy place for the entire world. What does that mean? What is that point about the glories of Krishna, or speaking or hearing the glories of Krishna, being themselves the holy place for the entire world? What does that mean? Or hearing the glories of Krishna. That place, any place where impurity means just for the glorification of Krishna with nothing selfish attached to it, where Krishna's glories are being sung, heard or chanted, that place becomes an extremely holy place. This is described by Maharaj Yudhisthira when he described Vidura, when Vidura entered Hastinapur, Tirtha Bhutani Tirthani Svantasthena Gadhavritaha, that you, because you, he was talking to a holy person, Because you carry Krishna always within your heart. You are a walking holy place, a moving tirtha. Because from what one carries in one's heart naturally comes out one's mouth. Whether it's cricket or politics or talking about because we were using a that little shortwave radio and to communicate to the different parts of where we stay in Gopinath Dham. So you hear every once in a while you hear the truck drivers and everyone talking on it and you can see what's in their heart because what comes out of their mouth and you'd have to say it's quite filthy most of the time. But when one is a holy person, what naturally comes out of that person's mouth is what is in his heart, and what is in his heart and what makes the holy person's heart holy is that Krishna, love for Krishna's relationship with Krishna in his heart. That's what comes out. So that's how to turn any place into a holy place, a worshipable place. So Krishna is saying that the bees must be holy personalities. Why? Because they are following you, O Balaram, O Adi Purusha, O most exalted person. They are following you, and what are they doing by their buzzing? Krishna is saying that their buzzing is the recitation of your glories. And your glories, they are themselves a holy place for the entire world. That is the essence of holiness. Because Krishna and Krishna's name, Krishna, Krishna's glories, they are the same. The essence of the spiritual world is Krishna. Because Krishna is the essence of the spiritual world. So where one is glorifying Krishna, that place, in that place, Krishna is present. What is that verse? Tatra naham tishtami vaikutte yoginam ridye shuva. I never can remember this properly.
Bolun.
Yes, that was very fast. Yes, mad bhakta mad gayanti mam. So where my devotees are chanting my glories, I'm not in the spiritual world, I'm not here, I'm not there. Where am I? I'm where my devotees are chanting my glories. So one could say, yeah, where, and what is a devotee? It's one who wants, in the core of his heart, his desire is to please Krishna. He's a spiritualist, an actual spiritualist. When we think of the difference between a devotee, a non-devotee, a materialist, and a spiritualist, a materialist is one whose center is himself. He wants to please himself. And a spiritualist who acts in such a way to, or rather, his desire is to please Krishna. That is what a spirit. That's the difference between a materialist and a spiritualist. His desire is fully to please Krishna, and there has to be a lot of purification of the heart before that can be that desire is fully taken over our consciousness. Because right now we have so many desires, so many desires. So the rest of this verse is, so Krishna is glorifying the bees, saying they must all be great sages because they're following you. This is the quality of a sage, a holy person. They're worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. So the bees, Krishna's saying, they have the qualities of a sage. Though you have disguised yourself within this forest, O sinless one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. So this is the quality of a sage. They refuse to abandon Krishna. Because in our life, we have to face our fate. And this is very, very difficult. We each have our individual fate, our karma. We will have in our life our ups, our downs, our successes, our failures. Some people just walking across the street, you know, they get hit by something and then boom, they died or they're crippled. Some famous people, there was that famous American movie star who was playing Superman, Christopher Reeve. Now he died, didn't he? Yeah, he died fairly recently. But you know, there he was, Superman. And then he was riding his horse, Superman riding his super horse. And the horse didn't jump and he went over and he broke his neck. And he was quadriplegic from then on. So one's fate is very difficult. It's difficult actually to face one's karma, one's fate. And not only when it's extreme like that. From going from powerful, handsome, wealthy to quadriplegic. Not only like that is it difficult to face one's fate, but even in the ups and downs of our daily life, to hold tightly, yes, Krishna, how can I serve you? Regardless of what is happening, inside, outside, to remain fixed, to as like the bees, they are not abandoning you. O worshipable Lord, this is very difficult. And this is what makes one a sage, actually, a holy person. If one acquires the ability, apichetsudaracharo bhajate mam mananyabhak, that one just simply worships Krishna internally, because obviously it's the consciousness, the internal consciousness of the worship, of the loving devotion of service is what we are trying to achieve. Constantly, regardless of what's going on, regardless of how our fate is treating us, such a person, sadhva eva. What does sadhva eva mean? He is certainly a saint, a shanta, a sadhu. By this one quality of constancy, consistency of in worship, of being fixed in the service of Krishna, they refuse to abandon you. And this is what the conditioned soul who's aspiring to serve Krishna tends to do. Aspiring to serve Krishna, but quickly abandons when either something desirable happens, some opportunity to enjoy comes along, we abandon Krishna, or something horrible happens. Because we come to spiritual life and we have a childish conception of what spiritual life is, that it's all, you know, as soon as you chant Hare Krishna a few times, or you go to the temple, or you go to the church, or you become initiated, or you become a devotee, or this or that, then everything is going to be all roses and flowers. No, excuse me, roses have thorns. No roses. Roses without thorns. Just flower petals. But it's not like that. This is the material world. And what makes one a holy person, and to actually attain the realms of spiritual happiness, is this point of being purified to the degree that one's relationship is so deeply established within one's consciousness that regardless of what the external world throws at us, which it will be according to our karma, according to our fate, we don't abandon Krishna. We remain fixed as a servant of Krishna. So therefore, these bees, Krishna is saying, have the qualities of sages, of saints, because They are following you. They don't abandon you. They don't abandon you. And while they're following you and not abandoning you, oh great Adi Purusha Lord Balaram, they are just singing your glories. So I'll read some of the purport here. The word gudam is significant in this verse. Gudam means, in the word by words, it means hidden. It indicates that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His form of Krishna or Balaram appears like an ordinary human being within the material world, great sages always recognize the Lord as the Supreme Absolute Truth. In other words, the activities of Krishna in the spiritual world, they are called Naralila. They resemble the activities of the humans of this world. Krishna walks into the forest, and in so many third world countries, young boys walk into the forest with their buffaloes or their cows to herd them, to tend them. All over India, you see this. All over Indonesia, you probably will see it. All over Thailand and Cambodia and Mexico. Mexico also has buffaloes and cows like that. But although the activities of Krishna and Balaram, they parallel the activities of the material world. There is a qualitative difference that's complete and is different from the material world as day and night. Because everything done by Krishna is filled with spiritual knowledge and spiritual bliss in eternity. Satchidananda Vigraha. So therefore, when one has materialized material consciousness, when one hears the pastimes of Krishna, one will take that consciousness like a projector projects its own image upon a wall. And we will project our material consciousness upon Krishna and Balaram and the activities of Vrindavan, and we'll say, oh, these seem like material activities. But actually, we're just projecting our own consciousness upon them. But great sages, as the purport explains, they always recognize the Lord as the Supreme Absolute Truth. All the transcendental forms of Godhead are eternal and full of bliss and knowledge, exactly the opposite of our material bodies, which are temporary and full of miseries and ignorance. And another word from the verse is Tirtha, which means holy place. The purport continues. One meaning of the word Tirtha is the means for crossing beyond material existence. Simply by hearing the glories of the Supreme Lord or by chanting them, one immediately comes to the spiritual platform beyond material existence. Thus the Lord's transcendental glories are here described as a tirtha for everyone in the world. The word gayanta indicates that great sages give up their vows of silence and other selfish processes to glorify the activities of the Supreme Lord. Real silence means not to speak nonsense, to limit one's verbal activities to those sound statements and discussions relevant to the loving service of the Supreme Lord. The word anaga indicates that the Supreme Lord never performs sinful or offensive activities. The word also indicates that the Lord immediately excuses a sin or offense committed by a sincere loving devotee who may accidentally deviate from the Lord's service. In the specific context of this verse, the word anaga indicates, which is aga means sin and anaga means sinless. The word anaga indicates that Lord Balaram was not disturbed by the bees who were constantly following him. Anupatam. The Lord blessed them by saying, O bees, come into my confidential grove and feel free to taste its fragrance. So here, comment by um, by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The bees are worshipping him, following his path in pursuit of the fragrance of his bodily limbs. Thus they do not abandon you in this forest, even though you are sometimes hidden for the purpose of your pastimes, invisible even to your associates. O Anaga means that you do not pay regard to their offense of going there. Therefore, these bees are the most important of your devotees, great sages whose nature is to meditate upon your intimate pastimes. Thus hints are given of the Lord's grace upon them. O bees, come into my confidential grove and feel free to taste its fragrance. Because to have the quality of consciousness that will allow us to meditate upon Krishna and his pastimes in Vrindavan takes an invitation like that from Krishna. One cannot attain the ability to do that by his own power. Because there are so many different levels of spiritual consciousness. So many different levels. But this topmost level of being able to meditate upon and act, what to speak of, act within the past, or interact within or serve within the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan, is the most rare, the most sweet, the most exalted of all levels of spiritual realization. Vedanti tat tatva vedat tatvam yajnanam adhyam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaneti samyate. So there are so many transcendentalists who view the absolute truth. A transcendentalist can be defined as one whose consciousness is not fixed in the world of matter, but fixed on the transcendental platform. So that transcendental platform can be seen in three different ways, and it is seen in three different ways. The absolute truth is seen in three different ways depending upon the mode of one's worship. It is seen in one out of three of the ways. So most transcendentalists, they perceive that absolute truth is Brahman, undifferentiatedness. And that's the usual concept of the spirit of realization or the absolute truth. That's the usual concept in the West and in India as well, that it is Brahman, just formless, boundless, all present. So if one practices renunciation and just tries to differentiate himself from matter through meditation and renunciation through one's intelligence, one can actually realize something of the absolute truth, as because there's nothing different from the absolute truth. That's the definition of the absolute truth. It's all inclusive. But there's a stage beyond that, and that the yogis can realize through their very careful practices of yoga. They make their consciousness so pure in a mechanical way, having no devotion, practically speaking. They make their consciousness so pure in a completely mechanical way that they can perceive how the Lord is all-pervading, how he is everywhere through his aspect known as the Supersoul, the forearm form of the Lord. So he is within every heart. Mama Angsa Teja Sambhava Idam Kritsam Ekam Sena Stito Jagat. Now Krishna is everywhere. So when one meditates or tries to pierce the absolute truth and understand it through yoga, one can understand the absolute truth as a Supersoul. But if one is immersed fully in devotion and never abandons Krishna and his relationship with Krishna, and is always chanting Krishna's glories and always desiring to serve Krishna by Krishna's grace, by his mercy, he invites one, he blesses one, with the association required to grant one entry into the intimate personal, his intimate and personal pastimes of Goloka Vrindavan. And that, when one contacts the impersonal form of the Absolute Truth, one gets in contact with the Sat aspect, the eternal aspect, which is a billion times more wonderful than any pleasure of the material world. That's the eternal aspect, the Sat. And then when one contacts, and that's characterized by clarity of consciousness, but undifferentiated consciousness. And then when one gets in touch through yoga with the chit, or the knowledge aspect, or awareness, one becomes aware not only of the eternal aspect of the Lord, but also of his forearm form. And that is still more wonderful than what to speak of being more wonderful than the material world. It is more wonderful than even the all-pervading aspect of the Lord. But then, when one contacts the Lord's Ladini Shakti, his energy of bliss, then one takes shelter of that energy and desires to serve Krishna through that energy, then one can go to Vrindavan, the spiritual world. And then one is full in one's natural consciousness of eternality, full knowledge and full loving service, blissful. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? What do you think about all that, Yaru, Pu?
So what are you saying about the happiness and stresses?
You're the Jyotish ceremony, so you know.
You can watch the planets go around and see it's going to be a better day, it's going to be happy. It's going to be troublesome too.
So you're just commenting.
Yeah, that was a comment. But then that might give you the impression that actually karma is supreme. But even the devotees might join the Krishna Hans move and they might find I'm struggling financially, I'm struggling with my health, I've married somebody who wasn't suitable.
Karma has a kind of supremacy in the material world, but when you realize you have nothing to do with this at all, this is all completely external, and I myself have nothing to do with my body nor my karma. This is going on mechanically by the laws of material nature, ultimately under the control of Krishna, ultimately, who is the controller of material nature, but that I have nothing to do with this at all. And if I fix myself at the lotus feet of Krishna, then this comes to me, and it goes from me, just like a fly may land on my cloth and then fly away. That's like one's karma. It glances off one. That is the way, that is what it means to transcend. As long as we have a material body, it must have its ups and its downs. It must get sick, it must die. But the devotee, the way he transcends his karma is not by making everything lollipops and yes, that's just what I was thinking of. I was thinking of something, gum, what is it? Well, you should be very proud of yourself. Let's give this fellow a gold medal. Damn, we're having ice cream in his fridge. Life isn't, it's not going to be like that for anyone in the material world. Anyone who possesses a material body. But one can become so devoted, fixed and devotion, that nothing moves him from his center, his focus on I am a servant of Krishna. Let all this happen. I am a servant of Krishna. How can I serve you in this circumstance? What do you think of that? Well, that's what a sage means. Well, it's time that we learn what the philosophy is. To learn what the platform of transcendence is. But it's a fact, though. As soon as one stops playing with the mode of ignorance and stops, if one follows the four rules and chants 16 rounds a day, 90% of one's distress goes. Or not, maybe not 90%, but such a vast part of one's distress will in fact go when one starts living a life more in the mode of goodness, then because the result of the mode of goodness is happiness. So it's a fact. But yet one has one's prarabdha karma to deal with. The karma that comes along with the body by Krishna's grace. Yeah, so therefore, if people chant Hare Krishna and expect, you know, superficial material results, they'll stop chanting Hare Krishna after some time quite quickly. But if one expects a transcendental result and understands and hears the philosophy and understands that there's a more chance of achieving something truly wonderful. And if regardless of what happens, one takes deeper and deeper shelter of Krishna, then one will become a sage very quickly. Regardless of what happens, seeing Krishna's hand behind it. Because ultimately our karma, if we chant Hare Krishna and trying to act devotionally, our karma is not our karma. It's actually Krishna pulling us and pushing us to Him. But as you're saying, that depth of Krishna consciousness, that much sincerity is not easy to find. But if we don't hear what the actual standard is, we won't even recognize it, what to speak of ever find it. And what will we strive for? We'll strive for nothing. And how will we become humble unless we strive for something exalted? And humility is such a close, it is almost the same as love for prema in one sense, because the deeper is one's humility, the more and the stronger one's calling to Krishna is, and the more Krishna is inclined to reciprocate. But unless we strive for the actual standard, how will we ever become humble? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Well, was there anything in there that came that was relatable to bits and pieces?